This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Postal workers warned that the United States Postal Service could be dead in 3 months and that Trump efforts to privatize it are an attack on a legal right of the people. We're joined by Jonathan Smith, president of the New York Metro Area Postal Union. And then a special message from Danny Glover, who's joined the battle to save the post office. Donald Trump is once again attacking the U.S. Postal Service, USPS. And during a recent press briefing, Trump claimed that the agency loses money every time it delivers a package for Amazon and that if it just raised its prices, USPS would be more profitable. However, the Postal Service is not meant to be a profitable enterprise. Jonathan, what is the Postal Service meant to do?
I'm glad you said that, because the key is when they wrote the Constitution, because the Postal Service is in the Constitution, and it's in the Constitution and it's written a certain way into the Constitution for a reason. The founders of this country did not write the postal business into the Constitution. They wrote the Postal Service because they realized that the post office was not there to make money, but the post office was there to bind the people together and give them a constant way to communicate at a reasonable price. I hate when people don't realize the key to the language is the Postal Service. Now, Trump says that if we charge more money, but it was Congress and the House of Representatives that put in, back in 2006, the limit how much money we could raise the stamp, and we had to get permission to raise the prices of stamps and like that. So we're not supposed to be there to make for profit, because if we were for profit, like what he wants to turn it into and privatize the Postal Service, then a lot of rural areas would not be served. Well, my question to Trump is, okay, you want to get rid of the Postal Service, then what's your alternative? It kind of reminds me of when they wanted to get rid of Obamacare, for lack of a better word, but they never could introduce what would be a better alternative. Where else are you going to go for 55 cents and guarantee if you put it in the mailbox in New York, a couple of days later, it'll be in California? There's no place else in the world. And we take a lot of pride in what we do. And even in times like this, we do what we committed to do. We deliver. We deliver during Sandy. We deliver Katrina. We deliver during the 9/11. And anytime you turn around, no matter what this country has gone through, the Postal Service has always delivered, and we have never fell down on the job, and we won't now either.
Jonathan, the Postal Service has experienced a low volume of mail due to the coronavirus. What impact has that had on the post office financially?
It has had a devastating impact, like it has had a devastating impact to every business in this country. Let me say this. It really bothered me because Donald Trump appointed the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors has 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats, and they recommended unanimously for a $25 billion relief for the Postal Service. Now, Donald Trump said that if they include the Postal Service in any stimulus package, that he will immediately veto that bill. So what message is he sending to the country? That everybody needs relief. The Postal Service is the only one in the package that services every part of this country, not a piece of this country, every part of this country, yet he said that he would veto it. Now, the question that we had to look at, why would he veto it? Well, he'll veto it because even last year when he put together his task force recommended the privatization of the Postal Service. Why? Because the Postal Service gets about $80 billion a year, and that $80 billion is not on the taxpayers' back. That $80 billion is purely on the sale of stamps and goods. What he should be concentrating on is how can you make the Postal Service more useful to the communities that they serve by maybe doing postal banking. The Postal Service could be even more useful to the communities than they are now. But let's look at the real reason that Trump probably wants to destroy the Postal Service. Everybody knows that Trump is coming up for re-election. And because he's coming up for re-election and because what's going on with this pandemic, it's a great cry in every state, even the red states, to do voting by mail. Because what is the best way to protect the people so they can enforce their constitutional right to vote, yet do it in a safe way? Voting by mail would be a beautiful thing, but it goes against an agenda of voter suppression. If you look at what happened just recently out in Wisconsin, who in their right mind in a primary would force the people to come out to exercise their right to vote and not postpone that situation? But if we had a voter by mail, it wouldn't be something that's unheard of. They put in mail-in ballots way back in the Civil War. So those that were participating, those veterans of the Civil War, would have the opportunity to participate in this process of picking our leadership. So in my opinion, the real underlying reason, outside of just privatization and an opportunity to make money off the Postal Service, is Donald Trump is trying to use the Postal Service, destroy the Postal Service, so he can keep hold of power.
Postal President Smith, I also want to ask you, since we've looked at the issue or begun to look at the issue of the Republicans attacking the post office at this specific time, do you think that it's a coincidence that this is also happening at the same time a highly politicized census count is underway as well?
Oh, no, it's not by coincidence, but let me say this. There has been attacks on the Postal Service on both sides of the aisle, but there has been, as far as postal relief and the need for the Postal Service, there has been a lot of support from both sides of the aisle to save the Postal Service, because those red state representatives that represent these rural areas, they understand what will happen if you destroy the post office. I'd like to break it down to my members in layman's terms. Prohibition, they said, oh, we had to do something because alcohol was killing our young folks. At that time, it was a lot of money over the illegal sale of alcohol. Then somebody got a bright idea, and they said, oh, well, if we tax alcohol, we can make a lot of money on this. So then all of a sudden, did it stop killing our children? Did it stop creating alcoholics? No, it didn't. So then they said, well, if you legalize alcohol, then how are we going to deal with the addiction problem? So they said, oh, well, what we will do is we'll raise the age. Well, it's the same principle with the Postal Service. If they destroy the Postal Service, they'll say, you want to know something? 55 cents is not enough. We need to send this for $3 and $4. This is not a secret. This is not a mystery. It's not hidden. This is about money. This is about them trying to get an opportunity to take the Postal Service that does not belong to them, but it belongs to the people. And they're trying to take a service away from the people by convincing the people that it's a service that is beyond its time, that it's costing them too much, because they never bring up the fact that the Postal Service does not cost the taxpayer one red cent to operate.
Another impediment on the finances of the postal system is the requirement by Congress to pre-fund retirement health benefits. How important is that? And is that in existence anywhere else in the country for any kind of large organization?
That's not in existence for any other organization. And it was how they did it, how they created the PAEA, Postal Enhancement. How they did it was in the lame duck session in Congress in 2006, where some were going to vacation and some were going home for good. And they had this vote to push this through that the Postal Service was obligated to pay for people's health coverage 75 years into the future, meaning we had to pay health coverage for people that wasn't even born yet. What was interesting about the year 2006 was probably the most profitable year that the Postal Service has ever had in its history. So again, what someone saw is they saw an opportunity, and when the opportunity presented itself, they went after the Postal Service and put these unreasonable demands on the Postal Service. They tried to send a false message that the Postal Service is not effective anymore. At the same time, what they did was they dropped the delivery standards, where we had a responsibility not only to deliver the mail, but to deliver the mail in a timely fashion. They also dropped those delivery standards, and I know if you've been around the last 3 or 4 years, you realize that your mail just doesn't get there like it used to get there. It's not because the men and women of the Postal Service is not out there working as hard as they ever worked, but they dropped the delivery standards in an effort to give the false impression to the American people that the Postal Service time has passed.
The attacks on this institution, it seems to me, they're an attack on one of the most reliable public sector employers in the United States. It employs a lot of unionized workers, moreover, black workers. And I wonder if you can talk about the issue of who is employed and the significance of that overwhelmingly in the post office.
Well, the Postal Service is the number one employer of veterans, especially disabled veterans. But what's also interesting, the Postal Service dynamic is probably 23% of African American. But at the same time, African American only makes up 14% of this whole country. So it's a major contributor to the minority sections of our country. And the labor union itself, not just the Postal Service, the labor movement is what gave us the middle class and gave people an opportunity to actually be part of the American dream. It gives good living wages and benefits, which is very important in these day and ages, and it gives you a union. It gives you a right where the employer just can't say that you're fired just because. It gives you the right to negotiate over your wages, your work conditions, and your hours. And it's a very important fiber that we sacrificed a lot. In fact, we just recently celebrated 50 years of the Great Postal Strike of 1970, where people put everything on the line. And what I found that was very interesting in that, I was looking at a video because I'm a little young. I was just born around that time. But I saw this video, and a woman said, they didn't put a name up there, but I thought her words were very profound. She said, "We thought when we went on strike, because it was illegal for us to go on strike, we thought that we were all going to get fired. Well, we thought it was a stance that we had to take, not for us, but the generation coming behind us." I think that's the stance that America has to take now against this Trump administration, not just for us, but for the America that we want to see for the generation that's coming behind us. When is enough enough? You know what the most ironic part about this? If you look at the supermarket workers and you look at the people at the gas station and you look at some of our most essential employees that's out there now, and you're looking at the truck drivers, these are the same people that $15 an hour was too much to give them. If we had to look at that right now in the middle of this pandemic, how many Americans you think that asking for $15 an hour and a union is too much to ask for the sacrifice that they're making in the middle of this pandemic? Those people that we normally don't feel as important are the most important to our survival right now.
But it does break the union. Wouldn't this break the union? Isn't this union busting?
It's absolutely union busting. Absolutely they want to bust the union, but they want to bust the union because what they see, they don't have to pay a living wage, if they don't have to pay for health benefits, if they don't have to pay for pensions, they're looking at how much more money could go into their pocket. That's what it's ultimately about. So, yes, it's absolutely union busting because they want to be rid of unions because they want everybody working for poverty wages while they sit up there and get billions and billions of dollars and give nothing back to the people who sweat and who backs that they're getting this profit off of.
And we are speaking to Jonathan Smith, who is the president of the Metro Area Postal Service. And President Smith, I want to ask you about something. You kind of talked about it just vaguely a moment ago, but Senator Bernie Sanders had repeatedly raised the idea about turning post offices into banks, saying if you are a low-income person, it is, depending upon where you live, very difficult to find normal banking. I think that the Postal Service, in fact, can play an important role in providing modest types of banking services to folks who need it. Is this one of the things that you could see the Postal Service doing that would also deal with what Ken referenced earlier, which is a lower amount of money coming in now by virtue of the coronavirus, et cetera?
It's absolutely something, and I've been a big proponent of it. I have spoken with Bernie about it, and because I happen to represent probably the poorestly represented as far as banks are concerned in the country, speaking of the Bronx. I represent all of the Bronx. And a lot of them don't have access to financial independence, and those payday predators and loans come into those communities, and they literally just rob and ravage those communities. The Postal Service could provide, again, another service, not a business, for a very reasonable price. to come in there and give those people an opportunity. And the reason why the Postal Service would also be great, there was just another poll that came out, and it says that the Postal Service approval rating is 91%. They are the most liked government agency in this country. And this doesn't happen time and time again, even though they try to strangle our staffing every year where they try to have lines going out the door and people get frustrated to come to the post office because they don't know how long they're going to be working in line, or they get the misconception that you see six windows in there and only two clerks are working and we got four clerks in the back not wanting to do anything. No, what this is poor management on the Postal Service side trying to send the message to the American public that the Postal Service is not efficient anymore, it's beyond its time. But if they start to offer these services, especially a service where you have money, it'll be much easier to get the community more involved in what's actually going on at their post office and much more interested in saving their post office because they would see it even more as a benefit to themselves. And to add one more point, a lot of times they want to talk about UPS and FedEx and DHL. Well, those same companies bring their packages to the post office because the post office is taking 40% of those packages the last mile. So even though you're taking it through the doors of UPS, the delivery man that's coming to your doorstep is the Postal Service. So let's be clear here that these companies, we could give back many more services. You could have fishing licenses. You could put ATMs in these post offices. You could make these post offices do a lot more to serve the community, the American communities. And in my opinion, we should be. Instead of talking about destroying the post office, let's talk about how we can make the post office not more profitable because it's not there for profit, how we can make it more of a service and an asset to the American people we serve.
One of the things that we haven't spoken about is the necessity for the post office is clear for the post office service and for it to expand its services to better serve even its local communities, rural and urban. What are the conditions that are facing at this time of COVID? Aside from the economic issues and the machinations of the Trump administration, what are our postal carriers going through on a day-to-day basis, and what needs to be done to protect them far better?
I've been in a lot of meetings with the Postal Service, and one of the things that frustrates me about the Postal Service leadership is that they're constantly talking about CDC regulations. That's all right. If you're using CDC regulations to actually protect the people. But in my opinion, a lot of times the Postal Service use CDC regulations to do as little as possible, not as much as possible. And because of CDC regulations, the Postal Service a lot of times throws common sense completely out the window. I've asked for some simple things that would protect the postal workers. I've asked them to give the postal workers priority testing. You can't say that you're an essential workforce, and if you're feeling COVID symptoms, that you can't get a test. So where is the priority testing for the postal workers so we can not only identify who actually has the virus, but we can stop the spread of the virus? I've also asked for them, and they just recently agreed to do this, but I've been crying since the beginning of this pandemic, to make the wearing of masks or some sort of face shield mandatory and not optional, not only for the postal workers that's working amongst themselves, but for the American public that comes and visited the lobby of the Postal Service. I don't think that was unreasonable to act. This is just some of the simple solutions that we're asking for, but when you tell me that you can't take the postal workers' temperature because it's illegal, and I go into the same post office where you have federal contractors, and before they let them on the site, they have to take their temperature. So how can it be legal for them to do it? How can it be legal for those before they start their shift at the hospital to get their temperature taken? How can it be legal for them to do it? Yet it's not legal to take the postal workers' temperature so we can stop the spread of this virus.
And what about also like hazard pay and things of this sort? Has that been raised at all for these frontline workers who are out there every day and the stress must be incredible? And I don't even begin to know how bad the conditions of the newer workers are in terms of vacation or time off because of the stress. So are there other kinds of things that really must be given to these frontline workers to protect them?
It absolutely has to be hazard pay. They are working in a very hazardous situation. There is no reason why this is even a discussion. The postal workers are as big as heroes as anybody else for their commitment and their dedication coming to work every single day. So far, nationwide, we've had more than 35 deaths of postal workers, and I expect that number to go up. Let's not even talk about just in my area where we've had people that have been tested positive. Over 300 people in my area of representation, that's all in Manhattan, the Bronx, and part of Jersey, that have been tested positive for the virus. Yet, they still feel a commitment. Those that were working in the environment with these individuals, they still feel a commitment to come every day, and they do their job. It's absolutely essential that they be considered for hazard pay. My greatest fear is it seems as though, just like these stimulus packages, every time something goes through, the postal worker is forgotten about. We were heroes when anthrax came around. We were heroes with what we did during Sandy. And it seems like when it's time to pay the piper, when it's time to give the postal worker what they absolutely deserve, not only because of their hard work, but because of the service that they provide the American people. They keep everything together while social distancing is keeping everything else apart. The postal worker has to be considered for hazard pay.
But not only hazard pay, in the previous incarnations of the stimulus packages that have passed Congress, they did put in money for the post office, but Trump is the one that stood in the way. Do you think there's any possibility of that being revived and Trump be damned?
I think there is. If people will go to APWU.org, they have where you could sign up to send a letter to your representative and asking them to give the Postal Service some relief. We have to put some serious heat on these representatives and let them know how important the Postal Service is to the citizenry of this country, no matter how Trump feels about the Postal Service. I believe if that happens, if everybody goes to APW.org and they send these letters to their congressional leadership, I believe that in the next stimulus package is my greatest hope that the Postal Service, they're trying to label it as a bailout. It's not a bailout. It's a relief. Like everyone else, we're going through the same thing as everybody else. So I hate when they call it a bailout. No. What happened to Wall Street? What happened to the real estate industry? That was a bailout. This is relief. And this is relief for essential service not to come back, that is still working and dedicated to do the job every single day.
You know, President Smith, I want to thank you.
And I'll chime in on that also.
You've got two votes here. Is there a final message for our listeners?
If I had a final message, I would ask to support the Postal Service by going to APW.org and filling out one of those letters and sending it to their congressional representative. All we're asking you is to give back to us what we have always given to you. Our motto is rain, snow, sleet, and now COVID. We will deliver. We will not fall down on the job. We take our commitment very seriously. And thank your carrier when you see them. Thank your window clerk. Thank the postal truck driver, because they are doing a tremendous job at keeping this country moving forward. And sometimes what they need is a little pick-me-up, and a thank you goes a long way. And I thank you both for our opportunity to speak and get the postal workers' positions out. I thank you so much for your support.
Mm-hmm. President John Smith of the Metro Postal Workers Union, you're a great shot in the arm. You restore my faith in what workers can do when they stick together, because they are the ones that create all the wealth, and to them belong the fruits of their labor. Folks, get on board. You tell Congress, ASAP, you better support the Postal Service.
Thank you so much. I just want everybody to know that the Postal Service belongs to the people, and the U.S. mail will never be for sale as long as I'm here.
Right on. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Jonathan Smith, president of the New York Metro Postal Union.
Now, actor-activist Danny Glover signed, sealed, and delivered Building Bridges a special message on his joining the battle to save the post office.
When I was growing up in the 1950s and 1960s, my community was the postal employees and union officers. To this day, I still run into people who remember my dad, James Glover, a postal worker who was indispensable to the life of the community. For black families like mine, the Postal Service has long been one of the few reliable paths to the middle class. My parents were so proud in 1957 when they had saved enough money from working there to buy a house. But Donald Trump is trying to change all of that. His administration wants you to think the Postal Service is in financial crisis. But the crisis was manufactured by Republicans in Congress to make it appear that the post office is bankrupt, when it's not. Trump is now proposing to privatize the post office. He would sell off the Postal Service to for-profit corporations that would ultimately jack up prices. Many local post offices would close down. This would be devastating to all Americans, but would hit the black community especially hard. The Postal Service is a critical source of good jobs for African Americans, who make up nearly 30% of the postal workforce. That's more than double their share of the population. And for postal workers, it would strip them of collective bargaining rights that have helped postal workers maintain good wages, rights that my parents' generation fought for. Bernie Sanders has been fighting for these rights.
Bernie Sanders has been waiting for this moment. He's full of ideas about the post office and how to improve it. I'm serious, like down to the smallest detail.
He has developed a policy with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to expand the services that the post office can provide, including banking services for all Americans.
Postal Service can make billions of dollars a year by establishing basic banking services so that lower-income people have access, not to these payday lenders, but to some place where they can be treated with respect.
Imagine walking into a local post office that competes with predatory lenders and check cashiers to provide low interest loans and bank accounts, or getting a debit card, ATM access, money wiring, and online banking from your post office.
That's right. Under the Sanders model, go to the post office on your lunch break and you come back with not just a sheet of stamps, but also a new small loan or a new bank account.
Let's work together to make sure that our Postal Service plays a vital role in our communities for many years to come.
That was Danny Glover getting the mail message to you to support the Postal Service and its workers.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.